when he was a young man, he never thought he'd see people stand in line to see the boy king.
King Tut.
How'd you get so funky?
Funky Tut.
Did you do the monkey?
Born in Arizona.
A little King Tut to get us started on this Monday morning. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on WPR News. Steve Martin did that song on Saturday Night Live in April of 1978. That's from an episode that many people, including our guest today, say it's the single best episode in the 50-year history of Saturday Night Live. But who has seen every episode? Well, our first guest has seen all 988 of them. Joined today by Christian Schneider. He's the co-host of the podcast, Wasn't That Special? 50 Years of Saturday Night Live. Spent time as a columnist at USA Today and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His pieces have appeared in the New York Times, National Review, among others. And he writes the newsletter Anti-Knowledge on Substack. So as we move along today, talk about Saturday Night Live. I hope you'll join in. Did you watch the show, or have you watched the show? Are you a fan favorite? What are some of your favorite cast members, maybe? Do you have favorite moments from the show? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can go ahead and email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Christian Schneider, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
988 episodes.
Oh, boy.
That's a major undertaking. How did this whole thing start?
Well, it's part of it's a testament to just how long SNL has been around. It's been around for 50 years, and how relevant it still is. For the people at home, Larry was laughing uproariously at the King Tut piece, which shows you that it's still very relevant. But you know, both me and my co-host Scott Bertram, he's a radio guy, so he's the real talent. I'm just kind of along for the ride. But we decided, you know, we're both big fans of the show. There really are two SNLs. There's the SNL as it originally ran, and then there's the SNL as we remember it.
Yeah.
And those can often be two very different things. So we decided to go back and said, let's watch every one of these, and let's codify each episode. We grade every sketch on every show, and then we come to a decision on, you know, what grades out as the best sketches, the best episodes, the best seasons. Let's do this almost kind of in a scholarly fashion and see what we can come up with. And it took 2 years. We watched almost 1,000 episodes. One of these days, I'm going to relearn the names of my children. But it was a lot of fun. And it's, you know, part of it is, you know, SNL is really an almanac of America over the past 50 years.
Yeah.
Just because of the way they put together the show, it's, you know, it's things that happened during the week. So when you go back and you watch these episodes, you think, oh, they're joking about this. I completely forgot that had happened. Or, you know, sometimes there's something happening and they're totally prescient in what they predict is going to happen. And we can look back at that in retrospect. And it's really amazing sometimes the types of things you see. So really what we wanted to do, and a benefit to us, was to see it and kind of remember a lot of the things that were huge news at the time that we've now completely forgotten.
Forgotten about. Well, that Steve Martin episode, the first one, and you say it was the best episode in the history of Saturday Night Live.
So I wanted to be a contrarian and say that it wasn't, because there's a famous book, a Hill Weingrad book. It's called Saturday Night, and it's a classic book about the first 5 years of the show. And in that book, they say everybody kind of knows that this is the best episode ever of SNL. And I like to be contrarian. I thought, okay, well, let's see. Let's watch all of the episodes and then we'll see. And as it turns out, it really is the best. I didn't want it to be, but it really is, because it's got Steve Martin, who, of course, a classic host. People, to the point where people think he was actually a cast member when, of course, he wasn't.
Yeah.
In those first 5 years, I think he only hosted maybe 8 times.
But he was good every time.
but he was great every time. And so, out of, let's see, 5 years, over 100 episodes, he was only there 8 times. But he was so good while he was there, people still kind of associate him with the classic first 5 years of the show. But, so when we were done with the whole 50-year process, we were able to go back and look at all of our grades and, in our Excel spreadsheet and figure out. And this is the one that graded out the best. It had King Tut. It had the Festrunk brothers, who people don't know their names, but they're the wild and crazy guys. There's a piece where he dances with Gilda Radner, which, of course, would become... Yeah. Really touching later when we find out, what happened to Gilda Radner a few years later. But it really is. He's obviously one of the best, greatest hosts, and it all came together. I think that's in the third season.
Yeah. Anne in Marshfield has a comment. Let's go there. Hi, Anne.
Hello. I have not always watched Saturday Night Live, but, our family still references the motivational speaker played by Chris Farley, and that when we're in a bad spot, we're going to live in a van down by the river. We still use that phrase.
Remember when you were in the Beatles? And remember when you were in the Beatles? And you did that album, Abbey Road, and at the very end of the song, song goes, and in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. You remember that?
Yes.
Is that true?
That was an interview supposedly with Paul McCartney that Chris Farley was doing.
Yeah, Chris Farley, obviously huge here in Wisconsin, a Wisconsin legend, and there have been a few Wisconsin connections with the show in the past. Ann Risley, who joined the sixth season, which was the season after the initial cast left, she lasted about 12 episodes before they decided this isn't working, and they had to recast basically the whole thing. Joan Cusack, who spent time in Madison, was on the show as well. And, a lot of Wisconsin connections. And Chris Farley, of course, who doesn't love Chris Farley?
I wonder what was his impact in your mind on Saturday Night Live?
So, we ended up doing our best cast members of all time list. And you'll see Chris Farley oftentimes in the top 10. Everybody loves Chris Farley, obviously. But this gets down to kind of like what we remember versus like what was actually on the screen during the show. And he was very good. He had some of the biggest highlights of the show. He had Matt Foley, who Anne just referenced. He had the Paul McCartney thing. He had the Chippendale sketch where he's going to be an erotic dancer and competing with Patrick Swayze, another classic sketch that was actually fairly controversial at the time. A lot of Farley's friends thought it was exploitative of his weight and things like that, and that it may have caused him body issues and all that stuff. Chris Rock especially thinks that sketch itself might have had something to do with what eventually happened to Farley. But so he was obviously great. But, he ended up getting fired from the show after season 20 because it was just kind of, it wasn't always outstanding. He kind of had one move a lot of times, like a closer in baseball, if they didn't know how to end a sketch, they would just bring Farley in to fall down or scream or do something like that. So and then he wasn't always available because of, you know, sadly, because of his substance abuse problems. Mm. He would miss big parts of seasons, and then he would come back and not be totally with it. One time when he came back from rehab, the very next show they did a sketch making fun of like a rehab guy, the guy that always relapses. And it's just really hard to watch. He was a scene stealer for sure. I think that probably got on the nerves of a lot of his cast members. But again, everybody loves Chris Farley. He was like the everyman that everybody could relate to. He had real guy problems, and one of the best for sure.
Scott in Iron River, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Scott.
Yes, hi. This is a great show. What you're talking about is kind of the direction I wanted to go, but you know, whenever I bring up Saturday Night Live, people often refer to the very original glory years, which were great, but I thought the years you're kind of talking about right now were the absolute best. And kind of prior to Farley, you know, with Dana Carvey and Mark Myers and Phil Hartman, I thought those were the absolute best years. And then it kind of goes in and out of what you were just talking about, where it's just kind of overly zany, but not very funny at times. And so I just wondered if you could comment on that. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you, Scott.
Yeah, part of the reason that we wanted to do this was because there is so much love for the first five seasons. And obviously, they do get a lot of credit because this is something that American TV hadn't seen before.
And they were really good.
and they were really, really good. And you would think that watching all 50 seasons would make us say, well, obviously, have a new appreciation for those 5 years and say, obviously, those years are better than all the others. But I think it's done the exact opposite. I think, you know, those first 5 years were good, but there were a lot of clunkers. There were a lot of things that didn't work. It took almost the first full season for them to really figure out what the show was about and how it worked. I mean, you had bits in there with the Muppets. You had, little movies that didn't work. And so it took them a while for them to get it going. And by, you know, season 15, 30, et cetera, they really kind of had a formula. So if anything, the later years, kind of the last 20 years, has given me an appreciation for those years, because when you stack those seasons up versus the first five, they're actually somewhat comparable. And, Lorne Michaels' thing is always, you know, the seasons where you were in high school are always going to be your favorite seasons, right?
And, why?
So we wanted to test that, and it turns out that the seasons when I was in high school are actually the best based on our rankings. And those were the seasons where the caller just mentioned Phil Hartman, Dana Carvey, John Lovitz, that whole cast. Mike Myers came in at the very end. He was kind of the linchpin between that cast and the Chris Farley, Adam Sandler, David Spade, and that cast moving forward. So, based on our rankings, those seasons, like the late 80s and maybe just touching on the early 90s, were probably the best.
Scott, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, as we talk about Saturday Night Live with Christian Snyder. Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about Saturday Night Live with Christian Snyder. He's co-host of the podcast. You ought to take a listen there. Wasn't That Special? 50 years of Saturday Night Live, and he's the author of the book 1916, the blog, and writes newsletters, Anti-Knowledge, on Substack. So it's great to have him with us. Questions or comments, or maybe a remembrance that you want to share about Saturday Night Live, I hope you'll join in at 800 642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. Just a kind of a procedural question here. All the episodes are available for streaming, but in most cases, I think they've been edited, usually because of music rights. How did you get the complete episodes?
Yeah, so if you go on to Peacock, you can watch the first five seasons unedited, and then maybe like the last 9 or 10 seasons are also unedited. But those ones in the middle, they are edited because they couldn't afford the music rights. If any sketch has music in it, they would have to pull it. And I'm sure there are probably some sketches that they've pulled from Peacock just because they didn't age particularly well, which is something that we talk about a lot on the podcast, which every episode we talk about the 3 or 4 sketches that probably wouldn't be able to run in the year 2025, which are, those are always really interesting. So, but yeah, so you can watch most of them on Peacock. We were able to just through kind of the internet and finding people who have you know, old VCR tapes sitting around that were able to get them to us. But we scrounged around and we were able to find all the unedited versions that we were able to watch. And so that was a huge bit, because there's some of the, you know, some classic sketches that have music in them that that you wouldn't be able to see on Peacock. So
I'm wondering, you know, we watched it, if you're watching it on TV, it's once a week. And you guys were probably listening to several in a row, or you were watching them in a different kind of format. Do you think that had any impact on how you judge the shows?
I think that is something that we discussed, and it's true, because a lot of the bits that they do, you know, you in the old days, you would watch it on a Saturday night. You'd go and you'd talk to your friends on Monday about what you had seen at work. And then it's another week, or it could be another 3 weeks before there's another show. And then you kind of see the same bit, but you had already forgotten about it. And so it's, you know, for recurring characters like Will Ferrell and Sherry O'Terry do the cheerleaders. You know, when you sit and you watch the shows back to back to back to back, as we do today, when you binge watch, after about the third time, you're like, oh, gosh, this again? And so I'm sure the experience at the time would have been very different, because you would have had a lot more time in between to kind of absorb all of this. But yeah, recurring characters are something that we talk about a lot. And it really kind of is the way that people judge the show looking back. Anytime you see a list of best cast members or best seasons, you'll see a list of like, well, you know, this one had this recurring character. This one had, you know, John Lovitz's, serial liar guy, or this one had, you know, Matt Foley, or this one had this, because recurring characters are so burned into people's minds.
Yeah.
And that's what they remember. And so that's basically what they judge certain seasons on. And there are a lot of great sketches that people just don't remember because they only ran once.
So you guys, you and your co-host, did a full ranking of the cast members from worst to best, and you had a little disagreement about who was the best.
We did. I put Eddie Murphy as the number one cast member of all time, just because he was such an incredible talent that basically carried the show on his back after the original five left. So season 6 comes in, and Eddie Murphy's really kind of an afterthought. They find this 19-year-old kid on the street, and they put him in, and you know, he does a Weekend Update bit. He's kind of in the background in a couple of things. And then they realize that this new cast that's, I mean, it would have been impossible for them to succeed just because of the expectations by the first 5 years and that incredible cast, the Gilda Radners, the Bill Murrays, Chevy Chase, you know, Dan Aykroyd, you know all the names. So the show was just about to be canceled. I mean, they almost had it done. And then in season 7, they realize, oh my gosh, we have this guy, Eddie Murphy, who is, you know, he's a comet. He can do anything. He's just so naturally funny and can do anything. And so he starts doing Buckwheat. He starts doing, all of his other characters. And, Mr. Robinson. Mr. Robinson was really kind of his first breakout on the show. And, that turned into a great bit. So for me, Eddie Murphy basically saved the show when it needed it the most. And he's just an incredible talent, unlike anybody on the show. And there hasn't been really anybody to me that has, they've been trying to replace him for 40 years, 45 years.
We've got a little clip of him as Buckwheat. Oh, man.
Again, probably the type of thing that you couldn't do today. And when he actually... So he was sore about some jokes that David Spade made about him on one of the shows. And so he cut ties with SNL completely, refused to be on any of the any shows, wouldn't come back for the anniversary shows. But then I think in season 45 or 46, he finally came back and hosted. And one of the things... One of the common threads during that show was how many of the characters he played in the 80s that he could not possibly do today. Like Velvet Jones. I won't talk about it here, but you can look it up. And Buckwheat and other things. And it was really kind of about like how the show has changed as much as that.
I kind of agree with you. I think your partner thought Will Ferrell.
So I had Will Ferrell at number two, which surprised me. Going into this, I knew Will Ferrell was a great SNL cast member, but I did not expect him to carry the show in a way that he did, from 1995 on. As I mentioned, during those last 2 years of Chris Farley and Adam Sandler, seasons 19 and 20, the show was really juvenile. There was a really bad magazine article that came out about the show, and it was really on its last legs. And so they fire Sandler and Farley, and then they bring in this unknown comic from the Groundlings in Los Angeles, and his name is Will Ferrell. And he goes on and just basically carries the show for the next 7 years to some really, really good seasons. And again, without Will Ferrell, I think there probably wouldn't be any SNL today, just because he was so much better than everybody else on the show at the time. It was basically just the Will Ferrell show for about 7 years. And he was incredible.
We have a clip of him doing the cowbell
yes,
sketch.
Yes, of course.
Then once more cowbell, we should probably give him more cowbell.
Say, baby.
And Bobby, you are right. I am being selfish. But the last time I checked, we don't have a whole lot of songs that feature the cowbell.
I gotta have more cowbell, baby.
But I'd be doing myself a disservice and every member of this band if I didn't perform the hell out of this.
Oh, man. So, as you think about it, what makes a great cast member? Is it the impressions, the characters, something else?
Yeah, I mean, there's some combination of all those things. Like, my co-host Scott is a big Phil Hartman guy. Mm-hmm. And it seems like in those years, like the late 80s, you kind of had to be either, it was like the Rolling Stones or the Beatles, you kind of had to be a Phil Hartman guy or a Dana Carvey guy. And I'm more of a Dana Carvey guy just because he could do voices. I mean, he could sing, he could do really weird type of humor. He just really had it all. Whereas for me, Phil Hartman is still great. I still had him in my top 10. But most of the characters that he's doing are basically Phil Hartman. like some version of himself. And then of course you had female cast members who could sing, they could dance, they could They could do really weird characters. They could do accents. The best cast members really can kind of do it all.
You mentioned Phil Hartman, and we got a call from Kelly, who couldn't stay with us, but she said that after Phil Hartman died, his children were relocated to stay with family in Eau Claire. His wife was from Eau Claire, so kind of another connection to Wisconsin.
Yeah, Phil Hartman, I mean, he was amazing, and it is so tragic. I mean, and that's kind of the thing that hangs over SNL. Like, there's so many tragic endings to so many of these people that we grew to revere over the years.
Arlene, we called and couldn't stay with us, wanted you to know about or to comment on Gilda Radner and her place in the show's history. I loved her on the show.
She's fantastic. I think I had her as maybe my fourth or fifth greatest of all time. She basically set the template for every female cast member that would go on for years and years. My line about Gilda Radner is not everything she was in was great, but she was great in everything she was in. I mean, whether it was a good sketch or a bad sketch, she gave it her all. She wasn't afraid to look foolish or look silly. There have been some cast members who you can kind of tell they want to do the sketches, but they don't really want to make a fool of themselves on TV. They want to maintain some sort of dignity. But not Gilda. She would just throw her around the room. She played like a punk rocker named Candy Slice. I forget the name of the character, but the girl in her bedroom where she's jumping on her bed and bouncing off the walls. And then, of course, you had Rosanna Dana, who's a total fresh new thing happening on Weekend Update. And she's just outstanding. And so she walked Amy Poehler and Kristen Wiig and all the others that came after her could run. And she's just outstanding.
Michael in Middleton wants you to comment on the short films of Albert Brooks from the first season.
Yeah, this was a main point of contention between me and my co-host. I didn't like them all that much. And when you do the reading on those seasons, you know, Albert Brooks signed up to do, you know, a short film. I don't know if it was per episode, but every couple of episodes. And Albert Brooks, for good reason, probably has a pretty outsized ego and demanded that his stuff get on there unedited the way that he wanted it. And I think some of it was probably too long. Like, there's one of his allegedly short films that goes on for 12, 13 minutes. And you can't really do that on SNL. Most sketches are 3-4 minutes. But he kind of commandeered the show. And at some point, they just figured this isn't working out. And fortunately, he went on to go make other great movies. But my co-host, Scott Bertram, loved them for the most part. And so we had some disagreements.
Ruth in Milton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Ruth.
Oh, hi. The ones who played Bob Dole and Newt Gingrich on the president's airplane, they're sitting together and trying to get the attention of the president, who would have been Clinton.
And there's so political. Thanks for calling in, Ruth. It brings to mind political sketches. And there were different ones. She mentioned Clinton. And we do have one. We do have one sketch, Phil Hartman as Bill Clinton at a McDonald's.
Do you favor the decision to send military forces to Somalia?
That's a good question. Yes, I do. Let me tell you why. See, right now, we're sending food to Somalia. But it's not getting to the people who need it because it's being intercepted by warlords. It's not just us. It's other countries, too. Like your McNugget is released from Great Britain to Somalia, intercepted by warlords.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the politicals, you know, everybody, I mean, there was no reason not to skewer anybody.
Mm-hmm.
On this, what are some of the political figures or scandals that Saturday Night Live handled particularly memorably? I think the Bill Clinton one was probably a good one.
That sketch, I think, might be either the first or second greatest political sketch in the history of the show, and one of the greatest satires in probably American political history. Because in that sketch right there, you have Phil Hartman doing Bill Clinton. And the sketch isn't even, it's not even 4 minutes long. But in that time, they completely nailed Bill Clinton. And this is before Clinton even takes office. So he's not even in office yet. He's still running. But it's a perfect distillation of Bill Clinton's, of how his appetites and how his lack of discipline would come to subsume his presidency. I mean, it's completely prescient in how it predicts that. And the way Phil Hartman does it is just perfect, you know, through the eating of the cheeseburgers, and as it goes through, you know, they keep making fun of Bill Clinton, and you know, they have him do some Weekend Update bits where they basically have him talking about, you know, the affairs that he's having while he's in office. And nobody knew anything about, like, the Monica Lewinsky stuff yet, but SNL was on it. They suspected it and they predicted it. And then, of course, once the Monica Lewinsky thing broke, they were all over that and it had something. Some of it was fairly tasteless, like when they had John Goodman playing Linda Tripp. Some of that stuff, but they really went after Clinton. And for a lot of, you know, political conservatives that think, well, you know, the show is just, you know, kind of a lefty show. There are a lot of moments, and I've written about this, there are a lot of moments that I think conservatives would watch the show and be actually kind of impressed by. They do take some nuanced positions on some of the things, you know, whether it's taking on the modern, political correctness that's going on out there. They do that. So there are some moments, but the Clinton one was definitely one of the big ones. And then, of course, you know, you can't mention politics on SNL without talking about Tina Fey coming back to play Sarah Palin.
Oh, my gosh. And we have a clip of this, which is, well, let's listen to Tina Fey.
Every morning when Alaskans wake up, one of the first things they do is look outside to see if there are any Russians hanging around. If there are, you got to go up to them and ask, what are you doing here? And if they can give you a good reason, they can, then you start responsibility to say, you know, shoo, get back over there.
Right on.
Right. So it was that happened right after. People forget John McCain named Sarah Palin as his vice presidential candidate. And right after that, he got a big boost out of that. He surged ahead of Obama in the polls. But then the facade started to come down a little bit. And part of that was because SNL went after Sarah Palin through Tina Fey so viciously. And some of it, they just didn't even have to write a sketch. They could just kind of say things that Sarah Palin had already said, had actually said during the week, and it was funny enough. At some point they took a poll and asked who said, I can see Russia from my house. And people actually thought Sarah Palin had said that, when in fact it was actually Tina Fey in an SNL sketch that had said that. But the two just kind of melded together. And then you know, McCain and Palin, helped by the 2008 financial collapse, really sank after that.
You know, these debate sketches, and we mentioned them, they've been a staple of the show for since the days of Ford and Carter, I think. And one of the – do you have a favorite?
Oh, there are so many good ones. Some of the best were the There's the Michael Dukakis one where he's running against George H.W. Bush, played, of course, brilliantly by Dana Carvey, where Dukakis says, I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
Oh, we've got that clip.
Like, oh, yeah?
It was, we've got Hawks as Diane Sawyer.
Jan Hooks, yeah.
And Dana Carvey as George Bush and John Lovitz as Michael Dukakis.
You still have 50 seconds left, Mr. Vice President.
Well, let me just sum up. On track, stay the course, 1,000 points of light, stay the course.
Mm-hmm. Governor Dukakis, rebuttal.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
So this is one of the points regarding politics on the show. It has not only the ability to comment on current politics that is happening at the time, because it literally happened a couple days before, and then here it is in a sketch on TV. So the show has a unique ability to comment on the politics that's happening. But then it also has the ability to push politics in a way that no other show does, because they start to coin phrases. Like, you remember when Al Gore, Daryl Hammond is playing Al Gore, and he coins the term lockbox. And there's another sketch where he's just all Al Gore during the debate wants to talk about is his lockbox. And so they started making fun of him, like, during the real campaign about this. There's a sketch where Will Ferrell is playing George W. Bush during one of the debates, and he comes up with the term strategery. like if you had one word that could describe your policies, what would it be? And he winks and he smirks. And he says strategery, and that actually became a word that George W. Bush's actual staffers, their PR arm, started putting out memos saying from the Department of Strategery. So they were in on the joke, and it actually started kind of pushing America towards different talking points.
Christian Schneider, our guest today, he is talking with us about his podcast that really goes through all of the episodes of Saturday Night Live. It's so much fun talking with him and hearing some of these clips as well as we move along. And you can join in, too, question or comment or maybe an experience relating to it, Saturday Night Live, that you want to comment on. I hope you do. Number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Coming up at noon today, we'll visit with the co-writer and director of the movie A Wisconsin Christmas Pie. It's a new movie filmed in Door County. And at 12:30, we'll look at the movies coming up in the fall. So we have a movie critic coming for you at 12:30 today. Right now, talking with Christian Schneider, his podcast is titled Wasn't That Special? 50 Years of Saturday Night Live. And still plenty of time for your comments. Give a call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. Mike in Sparta, we'll go to you now. Thanks for calling, Mike.
Hey, Professor, thanks so much. I respect and appreciate you so much. I was just wondering, I know Gilda Radner is gone, Hartman, Belushi, and Farley. Those are the only four I can think of. I wonder if Christian knows any others in the 50 years that have passed.
Yeah, interesting. You mentioned the four that come immediately to mind.
Yeah, let's see. Denitra Vance, who was notable because she was one of the first African-American women on the show. Sadly, she died of breast cancer. I'm trying to think of any others.
Nothing else. Boy, nobody else comes to mind.
I'm at the age where as soon as I learn something new, something else gets pushed out. So I don't remember any off the top of my head, but that should be something you should be easily Googleable.
Charles Rocket?
Charles Rocket, yes. He's sadly, he passed. He was on that season six episode, or season six. He was the host of Weekend Update. Sadly, we actually had him as the worst cast member of all time. So R.I.P. Charles Rocket, but he was not a very good cast member.
Norm MacDonald.
Yes, Norm MacDonald. See, now they're all coming back.
So those, there's a few more for you, Mike. Thanks for calling. Dave in Bluegrass, Iowa. Your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I was just up in Wisconsin last week listening to your show, but the one skit that really hit me was the Cheeseburger sketch with John Belushi, and it was allegedly a reflection of the Billy Goat Tavern in Chicago down on Rush Street. And two of my buddies and I went up there one time to try to find that place, and we couldn't find it. But we just got a big kick out of that skit.
Yeah.
As soon as we started doing the show, I went to Chicago to hunt down the Billy Goat Tavern. And you're right, it's difficult to find because it's kind of underground. It's under a street, but you can find it if you look hard enough. And they still do the cheeseburger thing.
cheeseburger. Oh, thanks, Dave. And
the burgers are delicious, by the way.
I was trying to remember the columnist in Chicago who used to go to the Billy Goat Tavern.
Was it like, Royko?
Mike Royko. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Jeff and Barry Mills, we'll go to you.
Yes, I was in North. I don't think anybody's brought up Jane Curtin's name yet, and I just wanted to throw that into the conversation.
Jane Curtin, of course, was outstanding. She was more of the ones that kind of didn't want to look silly. she was more kind of like a straight woman. She excelled in kind of being the host of a talk show, that type of thing, where she would be the host and, you know, the guests would be crazy or, you know, doing something. And so she was more the person that they would play off of. And she was great at her job. She was wonderful. And, you know, when Chevy Chase left the show, they handed a Weekend Update over to her. And she did a great job as a Weekend Update host. So that shows you the respect that they had for her at the time.
How important was that parody of Weekend Update to the success of the show, do you think?
It was very, very important. Some of the biggest stars the show has had are the Weekend Update hosts because they get to say their names at the beginning. And that a lot of people say that that's the reason Chevy Chase was kind of the first breakout star of the show, because he hosted Weekend Update where he got to say, "I'm Chevy Chase and you're not." So America got to know the name Chevy Chase before any of the other cast members. So, yeah. I mean,
who was the best?
This is a tough
one.
Of
the Weekend anchors.
I think I have to go with Dennis Miller, just because the show's in such dire straits after season 11. There's a whole documentary about how awkward and weird season 11 was, which was 1985, 86. And it looked like they were just going to drop Weekend Update altogether. But then they bring in Dennis Miller, and he kind of reformulates the whole thing and shows, oh, this actually can be really good again, because it hadn't been. There was a time on Weekend Update where they just ditched having a host and they would have the host of the show host Weekend Update. So Bob Uecker, when he hosted SNL, he hosted Weekend Update. They were just going to ditch having a host altogether. So I think Dennis Miller really kind of set the tone. He cast the die, and you know, political humor from then on really took off. Those were the years when, you know, right before The Daily Show and these other types of news/comedy shows started to come about. And I think that was in large part because Dennis Miller was so good.
In your opinion, from Mike, what's the worst Saturday Night Live episode?
We did do a list of the worst episodes. There's a really bad one hosted by Hilary Swank one year. There was one hosted by Kiki Palmer a couple of years ago that really wasn't great. I think the ones that are that are most irritating is when they do have like a great host and you know somebody who could be a great host, but it really falls flat. Those are the ones that are most disappointing, yeah. Really.
Tom and McGuanigo wonders if a lot of original members came from Second City.
That's true. There was kind of a competition between people who had been at Second City. You know, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Horatio Sanz, Belushi. I mean, this whole cadre of people. Mike Myers was at Second City briefly. Tim Meadows. So you have the Second City people, and then they're competing with the people at the Groundlings, which is in Los Angeles, where you had Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig and John Lovitz and Phil Hartman and Lorraine Newman was actually a founding member. So you have these two kind of comedy troupes that are in competition for SNL slots. And then you have the stand-ups also,
yeah.
who come to the show and succeed. Dana Carvey was really more of a stand-up when he came to the show. So those are really the pools that they have.
And Michael in Middleton emails back, Jan Hooks, rest in peace.
Absolutely, yeah. That was a sad one when she died of cancer. Also, star of Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
yeah.
One of my favorite movies. Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman, actually tried out for SNL and did not get the show because they hired Gilbert Gottfried in season 6. So there are a lot of interesting what ifs of like, had they hired this person, what would the show have looked like going forward? At some point, you know, they tried to pick out a lot of the SCTV people from Canada, and they tried really hard to get John Candy to be on SNL. So you can imagine, like, what a cast with, you know, Eugene Levy and John Candy and Catherine O'Hara and Eddie Murphy and Joe Piscopo and, like, Tim Kazurinsky, that whole crew would have been, like, in the early 80s. It would have been really something special.
Tell us a little bit more about the podcast. I mean, how's it formatted and laid out and so forth?
So basically, we would watch a full season of SNL, and then we would do a single episode summarizing that season. We would talk about kind of the big themes, our favorite things about it, and then in the second half of each podcast, we pick out the best sketches, the most valuable cast member, sketches that could never be done today, and a whole list of, we kind of give out awards for all of these things. So I think it gives a pretty good idea of every single season. And to my knowledge, it's the most complete thing that's ever been done about SNL, because we do all 50 seasons. And hopefully, if you listen, there's a lot of sketches that you'll remember fondly. And hopefully we mention a lot of sketches that you had forgotten, or that everybody had forgotten, that are actually really good.
And wasn't that special, the title of your podcast, wasn't that special, 50 Years of Saturday Night Live, wasn't that special, came from...
Right, that's a play on Dana Carvey's Church Lady, where she said, isn't that special? Like, that was her catch line, so yeah, we jumped on that.
I tell you, it's been a lot of fun talking with you today, Chris.
It's been great being here.
It's been my pleasure to be able to talk with you today. And yeah, that's a lot of, you had to have done, I don't know how many hours you put in on this, but it had to have been.
Well, without commercials, it's about an hour per episode. So you can just add up. It's almost 1,000 hours in the last 2 years.
And several thousand more hours putting the podcast together and everything else.
That is true.
Great, great having you with us, Christian. Thank you so much.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks.
Christian Schneider, our guest today. His podcast, again, Wasn't That Special, 50 Years of Saturday Night Live. It's great to have him with us, and thank you so much for listening in. I hope you stay with us, because coming up, we're going to talk about a movie made in Door County, and I think you're going to enjoy hearing about it as well. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us here on WPR News.
Stone.